Welcome to Worthy, the podcast of RGC. Today we have another installment in the Confidence series where we look at the other side of the value of business, beyond profit and loss and asking price, and looking at those other things to consider in determining a business's worth. Today we're talking to Christopher Swank, who is a certified exit planning advisor and senior director with BNY Mellon Wealth Management. Christopher has over 20 years of experience helping entrepreneurs and business owners prepare for the transition of their company, whether that's a sale to a family member, a sale to someone outside the business, or a sale to someone inside the business, such as through an employee-owned ESOP. Christopher, thanks for coming and talking to us today.
Thank you very much, Lisa. It's an honor to be a part of the podcast series, and thank you so much for the invitation.
Excellent. We really appreciate your time today. Let's go ahead and get started. So tell us about what your function is in your role.
Yeah, so it's a little bit different from what is typically considered to be a wealth advisor. My role specifically tends to be more consultative than anything else, particularly with business owners around transition. You know, there's just an unfortunate misnomer out there that the wealth advisor or financial planner is sort of brought in at the end of the transaction, kind of there to talk about how to invest the proceeds and achieve their objectives. But really what I found in my 20 plus years of work in this business is that that part has to happen at the very, very front end. So what we do is we sit down with the family and talk about the things that they generally are not talking about with their business advisors or investment bankers or other folks on the team. And it's really kind of nailing down to what do you want this transition? What do you want this exit to look like for you and your family? You know, let's talk about taxes and the impact of the sale on their financial planning. And let's talk about that. You know, where is this money going? And what are the transition plans that are in place to create the kind of lifestyle or really create the second chapter, if you will, the business owner's life? And, you know, I just found that, you know, a lot of times those conversations just go unsaid. And when I have the opportunity to have those up front with the business owner, I find that there's a lot less stress, Lisa, going through the transition, going through the exit, and there's a lot less arm wrangling around price when you can go to the negotiation table knowing exactly what you need for you and your family. And those are really the challenges that we solve up front.
No doubt. And that's a little bit like what I see as well, is that it's that preparation ahead of time before you really need to be on the front line that really makes a huge difference as far as just getting to understand what your needs are and what you need to come out of the transactions with. So for me, it would be what they need to actually develop in their company before they get to the process where they're actually in the mix.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I can share a brief story there. My father moved to South Florida from St. Louis, Missouri in 1967. And when he did so, it was really a part of the real estate and housing boom that was going on in South Florida at the time. And he opened up a construction business with my uncle. And it was really all centered around the Florida business in the Florida homes. There was a lot of plastering, a lot of construction in that regard. And one of the things that was interesting about this, and I sort of share the story with business owners when I meet with them, is that he sat my brother and I down when we were, you know, kind of middle teenagers and said, listen, it would be really, really wonderful if you guys would, you know, be a part of the transition of this business. I would love for this business to transition from my generation to your generation and really kind of keep it on. And interestingly enough, my brother and I kind of looked at each other and we said, Dad, we love you and everything. And it's not really the direction that we have for our career path. You know, I had worked with him in the hot Florida sun and over the summers and doing manual labor and things like that, which gave me great experience and how houses are put together and a lot of hands-on experience. But, you know, at that point, my career goals were not to take over a construction company. And that really resonates with a lot of business owners because they sort of have that mentality that the business is going to continue to the next generation or that my family wants to continue this business. And oh, by the way, generally speaking, they don't have that conversation like my father had with my brother and I. They just sort of kind of bring it up at the end and say, oh, yeah, you know, when the kids are older and they're talking to mom and dad about the business and they go, well, we want you to take it over. And a lot of times the conversations around planning and transition just don't occur early enough in the business life cycle so that they can have clarity. And that's really what I do is I talk about a lot of the things that they're not hearing from their current advisors. I spoke to 180 folks last week at the Florida Institute of CPAs conference here in Tampa. And it was a real impactful conversation around the state of business owner readiness and how very unprepared most business owners are to go through a transition. And what are we looking at? We're looking at all-time multiples and multiples of EBITDA at all-time highs. We still have $3 trillion in dry powder on the sidelines that's getting deployed into these businesses. We have more opportunities to sell your business than just selling to a strategic or an ESOP or a private equity firm. You know, we've got a lot more options, and that creates, Lisa, a lot more confusion. And what business owners need is clarity around what's most important to them.
So let's go back for 1 second to a family owner surprising the, or sorry, a family member surprising the owner with not taking over the business. So what happens? So we hear these stories occasionally. And so what kind of things do you see happening then right at that step off point when things split?
Well, you know, it's, you know, my personal experience is that my father just sort of, that was just the mentality, right? I build and then you continue to build, and then maybe your kids continue to build, and they evolve over in perpetuity. And one of my good friends, Dr. Tom Deans, who wrote an incredible book that is a mandatory gift to every single business owner I talk to, called Every Family's Business. And one of the things that he highlights in that book are seven questions that family-owned businesses need to consider every single year when they meet. And part of that is, do we keep the business or sell it? And one of the other questions that was just amazing is, and for his family to be able to have the keen insight to be able to ask a tough question like this is, would you be willing to risk your capital to acquire equity in this business? You know, I think way too many business owners think that this is sort of an asset that just transfers down the line. But having that conversation upfront and early with business owners and their family, and explaining their transition plans, can really alleviate a lot of stress down the road, and can give them, again, more clarity around what their strategy should be. Because we believe, as certified exit planning strategists and certified exit planning advisors, is that, look at, exit planning is just good business strategy, and it's not something that you think about at the end of the life cycle of the business, that it needs to be revisited from time to time, maybe every 12 months, maybe every 2 years, to see what kind of direction could we sell the business, what kind of direction should we head into.
And this kind of highlights the difference between what you and I do, once again, is I really just try and get in there early and get people to start talking about something that they don't necessarily want to talk about. Sometimes people see exit planning as talking about a finality that they don't want to embrace. And so it's just a simple way to get in there and start talking to them about what their team looks like, what their company looks like, what it would look like in a transition, trying to extract them from the process a little bit. But
it's a big deal, Lisa. And you hit it right on the head, is that a lot of business owners, typically speaking, unless they have a good advisory team, don't think of the role that you play as being important in the growth of the business until the very end. Because ultimately, the decision to buy or keep the business or sell the business is when you put all the legwork in, not at the negotiation table where someone picks up the phone and calls you unsolicited and said, hey, I'm going to offer you $10 million for your business, which a lot of business owners get. And they kind of jump into the number without doing the legwork up front. Now, part of that is just a sign of the times. There's just so much money out there that's going into privately held businesses and pushing those multiples higher. And so I don't blame business owners for kind of starting at that step. But more importantly, they need to just sort of pump the brakes a little bit, Lisa, and really engage folks like yourself, your CPA, your attorney, and making sure that you're starting to build that transition team as soon as you can so that there's collaboration. You know, that's something that you really hammer home. And I've heard that on your previous podcast, Lisa, about the importance of that open dialogue. And that's really kind of the mentality of a certified exit planning advisor and a CEPA, if you will, is what we think about from the get-go, is it's got to be a collaborative conversation, and somebody has to be the quarterback that's going to drive this process. And all too often that role sometimes falls in the hands of someone who's maybe unqualified, or let's just say is unavailable on a regular basis to be able to drive that deal. And sometimes you can have real tragic consequences as a result.
And this sort of brings us to the point where I asked you bluntly when we were getting ready for this, what value, what's your take on value? What do you bring to valuation of a business, since you don't actually set the value? What is it that you bring?
Yeah. So as a certified exit planning advisor, I have training and kind of getting a sense of what a business would look like on the scale. So what does that mean? So you have businesses that are best in class. And you sort of think about it as a bell curve. And when we look at multiple numbers and we see, you know, for example, let's just say the manufacturing industry year to date, you know, may have an average multiple of EBITDA of around, say, 7. Let's just throw that number out there. That's not the real number, but let's just say that's what the market is going for, and that's what an average sale price is. Well, keep in mind that on that bell curve, you're going to have some businesses that are best in class that are going to go for a higher multiple than that. And you're going to also have businesses that are not average or best in class that are kind of on the lower end. So what are things that are pretty obvious markers of a best in class business? Well, first and foremost, you know, I take business owners through a pretty comprehensive process of understanding kind of how the business is set up. You know, obvious things to us, which are not always so obvious to business owners, are client concentration. You know, a lot of business owners will sort of wear this as a badge of honor if they have a Fortune 500 company that's one of their top clients. But, you know, business advisors like you and I, Lisa, look at that and see that as a potential risk. You know, if you have a 70 to 80% concentration in one client, just like I teach my clients when they become liquid and we actually are investing dollars, is we don't put all our eggs in one basket. For a buyer perspective, that could be a pretty risky engagement. So the business could be strong, great multiple, great cash flow, excellent CFO, great management team, succession plan in place, all these other things that may feel like a best-in-class business, but that potential issue right there could take a business from a 7 or an 8 or a 10 multiple down to a 4. You know, Lisa, it's really hard to kind of sit down and talk to business owners and say, you know, the baby that you have is great, but gosh, I just don't think it can get what you're looking for from a best-in-class perspective. And that's really where a value advisor or a growth advisor, someone who's a specialist in going into the fine details of the business. So what can we do to take the business from, let's say, best in class to or average or slightly below that due to some potential risks? How can we de-risk the business and get it to best in class status? Sometimes you don't do anything.
And I think these are excellent points about that there is a scale that they're actually going to be compared to outside of their own functioning. They're going to be compared to other businesses, and they need someone who's adept in that, like yourself, to help them through that process. But I think there's another perspective here to look at too, which is the thing that we've talked about is what you bring to them is their family needs being met after the sale.
Absolutely.
And so looking at and how do you address that with them? How do you help them figure out what they're going to actually need?
Well, and it's so great because, you know, talking to a business owner and most of them, if I were to say, could you create a balance sheet of your business, can go into Excel, press print and hand me a balance sheet. But if I were to say to them, could you print out a copy of your personal balance sheet? I get a little bit more of a direct stare. Why do you need that? Why is that important? Well, when you're going into holistic wealth management and holistic planning, which actually identifies assets and liabilities on the balance sheet, that's really critical. And really in that very, very first step, Lisa, we really want to identify and align what we in the certified exit planning advisor world call the three legs of the stool. So we've got the business, the personal, and the financial legs all aligned together. Most business owners, typically speaking, at least from my experience, is that, you know, they may have some documents in place. They may have a will. They may have a trust. They may have a buy-sell agreement. They may have a shareholder agreement that could or could not be current or may or may not be current. We take a look at those things right from the get-go because that's critically important to the overall health of the business and what this potential liquidity event could happen. So let me give you a quick example of where this was sort of really obvious. I was working with a family-owned business. This is a fourth-generation business, and I was brought in by one of their trusted advisors. Said, "Chris, you know, they've gotten to the point where, you know, this business has survived and exceeded all odds. It's to the fourth generation, which is very rare, to take this huge part of their balance sheet, which is illiquid, and make it liquid." And I said, "Well, this is a great idea." So of course, you know, the business owner comes in, tells me about how great the business is, and all these clients and these contracts that they have. And I said, "Would you mind just sharing a copy of the ownership structure with me? I just want to get a sense of how the ownership of the business is set up." And he sort of shook his head a little bit and scratched the back of his neck and said, "Oh, yeah, okay, but I don't see what the deal is because I own a majority of the shares." And I said, "Okay, that's fine. I'm sure you do, but I just want to kind of get a sense of what the organizational structure looks like." And when he shared it with me, Lisa, I immediately knew from the get-go that this was not a business that was going to sell. It was set up in a lot of very complex trust structures. There was allocations with other family members that were not necessarily getting along with the business owner, the one. He did not have a majority share ownership in this business. And if he were to think that he was going to sell all of the company versus just his shares, that there was a lot of layers that he would have to have gone through. And it really wasn't thought through from that perspective. Again, the business owner looked at it and said, I've got this great business. It's in the fourth generation. I've got these great contracts. I've got all these opportunistic things that somebody could come in and buy. But yet something as simple as the ownership structure of the business not being aligned with the other, the business, the personal and the financial side, it has side railed the deal. In fact, unfortunately, the company did not end up going to market to sell. They're going to have to do quite a bit of work in order to make the business saleable. And the number that they needed after we did some cash flow modeling, and again, this kind of goes through some of the work that I do with the family, is kind of saying, well, what kind of lifestyle do you want to create? And one of the great things about the business owners I work with is that they sort of solve that number by selling the business. They've got enough to live the lifestyle they want, and they have a surplus at the end, which is great because then they can create a legacy. What does that legacy look like? Is it charity? Is it family? Is it putting your name on a building? And it's not the type of decision that's made way at the beginning part of the process, but it's more of an evolution of a dialogue that just kind of develops. And I can tell you firsthand, Lisa, that of the business owners that I've had the honor to serve over my 20 plus years, they have been able to give back to the community in ways that have just exceeded everyone's expectation, whether it's a passionate charity that they were involved with that maybe didn't have the financial backing to serve as many families, now can serve more families. I have a client who provides backpacks and he provides physicals and things for students when they're going back to school so that they can get a full physical, a hearing test, a haircut, a backpack, new sneakers across the board that would not have happened if the business wouldn't have sold.
That was just an awesome example.
It is. And it's what do you want to create? And we really talk about that second chapter. What does it look like? And for a business owner, that could be overwhelming. It could be frightening. You know, when you've owned a business for 25, 30 years and you sell it, that could really take a step back and go, wait a second, do I really even want to do this? And honestly, I've seen business owners go through stages of grief after they've sold their business. But if we can get to them early enough and start creating that lifestyle or that life after the business, you know, I create a balance sheet for the business owner and I say, congratulations, you're the CEO of the family office. And oh, by the way, you have all these people that are still reporting into you, like your wealth advisor, your attorney, your CPA. So the more familiarity that I can provide to the business owner before the sale, that this is really still the same structure that you had in a business. You still have people reporting into you. You still have a balance sheet. You still have cash flow. You know, when you speak in those terms that are relevant to business owners, it's less stressful. It's less of a transition. And oh, by the way, we can help businesses transition or sell quicker the earlier that we're brought in because there's less of a problem. There's less of an issue that potentially could come up at the end.
And I love the idea of this whole part about the family, how much money the family's going to need to survive after the sale, because it's really embracing stakeholders. So I have a bad habit myself of looking at primarily customers and employees as the stakeholders of a company, which is completely wrong. There are so many more. And I even if I were to sit down and make a list through effort of all of the possible ones, I don't know if I would reasonably put the family on there, even if it was a family-owned business after transition. And so I just love that you embrace the idea that let's just say, look, there's a family that's going to need to be supported in some way after this. And that way you don't get blindsided so much. You own it, you pick it up, you look at it, you say, okay, these are the kinds of things. And you can pre-plan for those things instead of being blindsided down the road. Oh, I didn't think about that. I really love that embracing of a different way of looking at the stakeholders than I tend to do myself.
You know, Lisa, I'm so glad you brought that up because that's a, you know, when we look at sort of the landscape of businesses that sell, we know for a fact that 70 to 80% of businesses put on the market don't sell. And that's pretty troubling. And that's one of the real passions I have around exit planning is that I want to change that paradigm. And as a part of the Exit Planning Institute and being a part of the certified exit planning advisor communities, we really want to change that. And how do we change that? Well, part of it is education. But if you look at the satisfaction rate of business owners, you know, two-thirds of them, this is a PwC report out of a book called Whose Business Is It Anyway? So two out of three business owners, when they've sold their business, has profoundly regretted the decision. You know, that's pretty frightening, because you would think that, my gosh, I've got all this money now, I should be happy. Well, the problem is that if you don't put the work in up front, as you said, with the family, and I like to think of it as more preparing the family for the money, because many of these business owners have never had liquidity like this before. You know, they maybe only have at the most $2,000 or $3,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 in their bank account at any given time in their personal name. Now they got $5-10 million. You know, what does that money mean to the family? You know, what does that money mean to us? How can we use that for good, obviously? But how is it that this money now can be used for the benefit of legacy planning? How do we put those into place? And that all goes back to, Lisa, step one, which is you've got to have an experienced team at the very beginning. If you're hiring a family, if you're selling your business and you're bringing in a corporate attorney who's never sold a company before, you're going to feel some pains around that. If you're bringing in people that don't have the experience in helping to sell and address all these issues, and also, by the way, the business owner has to be ready. You know, a lot of times business owners are not ready to sell their business. In other words, they don't want the advice. You know, so of the available businesses that are out there, the Exit Planning Institute and the work that we've done on research says only 60% of the businesses in the middle market, which is basically what makes up a majority of the privately held businesses in America, only 60% are market ready. And so if you think about that from sort of just a high level perspective, is that that's 40% that are not market ready. So we're not going to encounter business owners that are going to be excited to hear this message. It can be very difficult when they're like, why can't we just get to the end? Why can't we just get to the process, the end of the line where we get the money? And my response is, if you don't do the work ahead of time, you're not going to know how to get there. Right. And it's going to be a more difficult experience.
It's like those two statistics feed each other. The one about how satisfied people are after the sale and the number of that are market ready. It's like how many of the ones that weren't satisfied after the sale were also the ones who weren't market ready. Probably a
exactly
large
right.
number, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a huge opportunity here. You know, Peter Christman, who's the original exit planner, wrote a book many years ago called The $10 Trillion Opportunity. And it's all about this wave of wealth from business owners, primarily baby boomers, who have had these businesses. And, you know, what is this going to do? These businesses are going to transition over the next 5 or 10 years. How can we, again, change the paradigm? How can we put more businesses that are sellable? How can we create higher value for these businesses? You know, and that kind of makes it a little difficult right now, Lisa. I will tell you that I have seen businesses sold in the last 5 years that were not best in class, but got best in class multiples, because there's just so much money out there chasing these businesses. And when you put a company out to auction, you know, certainly goes to the highest bidder. But one of the things that I've really kind of cautioned my clients about in particular is that if you're looking at earnouts and things like that, we really need to study what that looks like, because tragically, a lot of times those earnouts don't work out. But yet when they present it in the context of a total package, it can be very attractive. And particularly a company that is doing well, a business owner looks at that and says, oh, I can blow those numbers out of the water. Well, you just need to make sure you understand what those numbers are, how they're created, and what kind of, and this is something that I do in conjunction with the collaborative process of our team, is let's define what that looks like. And can you survive on not getting an earnout? You know, I think they're too quick to anchor to, well, I'm going to sell my company for $15 million, plus I got the opportunity to get up to $7 or $8 million of earnouts over the next 2 or 3 years. That's great. But you're not running the business anymore. You're not calling the shots. And so what happens if you don't hit those earnouts? Is this still enough cash for you and your family to achieve all of your objectives? And that sometimes can be a real head scratcher again. You know, one of my goals in my work that I do with my business owners every day is that if I can leave a meeting and they think to themselves, gosh, I didn't think of that, I've done my job.
And I just was thinking, I haven't thought about that, about how there is more money involved in a lot of sales besides just the final transaction. There's the earnout. I don't really embrace that part. It's not part of my business. So it's great to hear that and be reminded that there's so much more even just beyond the actual finality of the sale.
That's right.
So the one thing I wanted to talk about is that when I talk to people, I talk about a life cycle for a business. So a small business, mm-hmm. a new startup has just maybe just themselves, maybe one or two other people, and they don't necessarily have to have a lot of internal processes. There's a lot of word of mouth that happens there. When you look at a large corporation, it's got all of these great employee engagement processes in it. It's got customer engagement. It's got performance appraisals and raise structures, all these things. Somewhere along the life cycle of an institution, they have to pick up some of those things. And so that's sort of what I look at as what I do is I help them pick up these things at the right time. But and when I portray that onto you, the thing that I see that I hadn't thought about before is the thing about having 15,000 in the bank usually. So if the business owner wasn't very liquid throughout their whole process, but everything worked for them. They had an accountant, maybe they had a bookkeeping system that, you know, maybe it was a commercial system, whatever it was, and that worked for them. And they assume that that's going to work for them later. That's what I generally see. They had some big influx of business and they were overwhelmed because they didn't put in a new process anticipating that. Same with your people. They didn't see that there were going to be problems with having all of that money coming in, and they really do need a new strategy. They need an M&A team like you guys, no doubt.
Yeah, it's interesting that also that you put that kind of perspective and context right in, because they really do, Lisa, go hand in hand. It's some business owners are just natural entrepreneurs and innovators. So there are some people who run businesses that having a growth strategy, having processes and implementation, and not running everything off of QuickBooks, but actually having a more advanced software program if the company, if it warrants it at that level. A lot of people just, that's just sort of natural to them, and they just really got a good collaborative team. And I see those too, where you kind of come into the table and you're like, wow, this is best in class. I was talking to a business owner about 3-4 years ago in Northeast Florida, and it was a commercial landscaping business. And he was a young gentleman. He had been offered a very attractive package to sell his company. And just talking to him, he was just a natural innovator. You know, all of his trucks had GPS, and he had employee protocols and procedures and all the things, Lisa, that you talk about, sort of the nuts and bolts of a business that you need to have in place to make it, as I say, best in class. He had done that on his own, and that was just sort of the way he thought. And when I asked him the question, I said, well, who exactly suggested you to have all of these innovative things in place? And he's like, well, his answer was sort of strange. He was like, well, every company should have this, you know, and I've seen businesses where they're so far behind in technology, when they do sell, private equity typically comes in and they just tear the inside system out and put something in place that should have been there many, many years ago. And it goes back to, you don't know what you don't know. And if you don't have that innovative consultative process for your business and for your personal needs, a lot of it's not going to come together. You know, think about it this way, you know, a lot of wealth management firms have minimums, and a business owner who has most of his wealth tied up in a privately held company doesn't have that minimum that they meet. So they're not getting the engagement that they need around estate planning and taxes and lifestyle and retirement and legacy and charity and all of these things, because they don't meet the minimums of the institution. And what's great about my role is that I have the ability to sort of play that consultative part of the discussion, where we're not really trying to sell them anything. What we're trying to do is kind of get an understanding of where they are. Ultimately, if I've done a good job with the family and help prepare them for an exit, the opportunity to be there as a wealth advisor to continue that relationship is there. And I've been blessed to work with a tremendous amount of business owners where, you know, they come back to me and they say, Chris, I never knew that I needed to do all of these things. I thought it was just sort of a flip the switch. We sell the business and we move on. And really that preparation is what makes the difference between a consultative advisor versus someone who's saying, you know, call me when the business sells and I'll put together a strategy and here's the performance and here are the numbers. You know, there's a lot of value that we can add, or any wealth advisor that has a consultative process can add, to really help them understand and plan appropriately. You know, 2 to 3 years before an exit, it's not unusual to engage a conversation with me. And Lisa, you know, you insert yourself at those stages as well, and kind of when they've hit that midlife cycle, when they really need help. And a lot of times they don't have the type of resources or access to resources that they need. And so education is a big part of it. I also co-lead the Alliance of Mergers and Acquisitions chapter here in Tampa. We do a lot of education for business owners in their language, and just trying to get them and start turning those wheels so that we can ultimately help them at that point when they decide to exit. They've done some of the work.
So let's say we have an innovator like the example you gave with the man with the trucks. So
Yep.
let's say I'm a business owner and I have an accountant and I have a lawyer and I've been talking to them about getting out of the business. So I think I'm doing everything I can. Have you seen examples where the people that I have in place aren't necessarily the ones that I need at the end?
Yeah, tragically, I see that a lot. I had mentioned a story earlier, and I'll kind of go a little bit more in depth. Family that I started working with about 12 months before the exit, more like 6 months. So it was a little shorter period of time for us to really look at some planning opportunities, but still, it was an opportunity to really help the family, and we did a lot of work around that. And the trusted advisor in this case was the corporate attorney. And unfortunately, corporate attorneys spend a lot of time in court, and M&A attorneys generally don't. So when there were decisions that needed to be made, meetings that needed to be held, there was a tremendous delay around that, which created a lot of stress and frustration in the process. And it could have potentially derailed the opportunity. And so we needed to have a candid conversation with the business owner. And this particular individual had a great relationship with their attorney, and we did not want to exclude him from the process. That's not really our job to say this person doesn't need to be on the team, but really just kind of engaging, hey, is there someone else we could potentially could come in and work alongside with this individual so that they could help move this process along? And ultimately, that's what did it. There was just a lot of decisions that needed to be made that just weren't getting done, and this individual was very competent to drive this himself. It's just the daily rigor of his day job, and current and established discipline was keeping him from a lot of the things that needed to be done. So I don't think it's necessarily trying to adjust the team, because very frequently when I look at these deals, there's so few that actually have the right people around the table. And a lot of times these folks are, good advisors. They're family friends. I've known this person for 25 years. We went to college together, whatever the case, that's great. But maybe we should also consider potentially adding some other resources, some other access to knowledge that can help us with this process. And I found that conversation's a lot easier to swallow than saying, I'm sorry, Jim, you got to fire Joe, because I know he's your best friend and your golfing buddy and your college fraternity brother, but they just can't get it done. And I found that that does make a bit of a difference as well.
So what about, do things go wrong later on? Like, is there a point where there's litigation that can be involved after a merger acquisition? Sorry.
Yeah, and I've seen that too, unfortunately. And some of it's around the earnout, the calculation of the earnout. Sometimes it can be worded in a way that's not necessarily advantageous for the exiting business owner to earn. And again, it goes back to control. Usually, when a business is sold, they will say to the business owner, "Hey, we'd love to keep you around for about 6 or 12 months to, make the transition a smooth one." But in reality, the buyer wants to get that owner out as quickly as possible, so that they can start implementing the things that they need to do to make the company successful. And that's also kind of a step back to when you sell to a private equity company. And I've seen private equity that their job is to make that business profitable. They're not there to drive it into the ground. And I've seen some instances where that's happened, but a majority of those deals, they are doing it because they want to be successful. They're investing a lot of money and they want the company to work well. But there can be just little line items in the sale agreement that maybe were overlooked or weren't paid attention to. Maybe it's an earnout. Maybe it was an escrow. maybe it was some of those things. And typically, the buyer, ultimately, if they don't succumb in a conversation between the two, then it tragically goes to litigation, which I've seen that happen too, where they're just not. In the business owner, the exited business owner's mind, that the buyer was not following through on the obligations that they had agreed to in the process. Some of it's written, some of it isn't. That's why it's always so critically important to have the right experienced team to look at that, to make sure we're evaluating those earnouts, those escrows, those holdbacks, in looking at them through different lenses, and then also having that difficult conversation of what happens if it doesn't work out. If you're not running the business and the buyer decides to come in and completely change the strategy, how does that affect you? How does that affect the family?
How much
And it could be
can,
expensive.
oh, sorry. So if I was a business owner and I figured out I really did need a team like this, how much would I expect to spend on something to institute something like this?
So the typical, I would just say the all-in cost, it can be anywhere between I would say 1 to 5% of enterprise value. And so, you know, if you're, you know, a $10 million company, it could cost as much as $500,000. I've seen it go well over $1 million. It just all comes back to understanding what the cost of services is going to be. And it's really, really important, especially for the business owner. Sometimes they'll get out of the deal and say, gosh, everybody else made money but me, whereas that's not, could be further from the truth. Good advice, you're going to pay for it, plain and simple. If you have somebody who's doing it on the cheap or maybe doesn't have the experience to do that, I have yet to see a good result that comes out of that. It usually means that we got to bring in someone who's super expensive or could have done it right the first time, but now we got to bring them in to do it right this time. And it's critically important to have that experienced team around the table. And if it means you're going to spend a little bit more, listen, this is one of the largest assets on your balance sheet. Why would we not invest to have the right people around the table to help us to transition? There's nobody that I've ever spoken with that said, I sold my company on the cheap and everything worked out just fine.
No doubt.
You know?
Okay. Was there anything else that you wanted to let our listeners know about today? I think we've sort of covered a lot of our topics. Is there any other burning issue for you?
No, you know, I just say that, you know, this is a process. Lisa, you have a process, importantly, certainly your education, your PhD, your experience in setting up systems and implementing systems is critical. A lot of CEOs and entrepreneurs don't sort of think in those mindsets. That's why they hire CFOs or folks like yourself to really put the pieces of the puzzle together. A lot of business owners are just really focused on cash flow and they're focused on making the business bigger and driving that. And we really, as certified exit planning advisors, say, listen, cash flow is great, but we really need to look at enterprise value. You know, you could have a company that's pumping out a ton of cash flow, but that doesn't always necessarily mean that you're going to get top dollar. And just one quick last example, I was speaking with an advisor who had a business owner here in Florida, and he was pulling out a tremendous amount of money each year out of the business, upwards of over $1 million. And was basically saying, hey, listen, I'm going to sell. This company is so awesome and so profitable. I'm going to sell it. And I sat down with the advisor and we did a quick kind of back of the napkin. What kind of valuation could we get? And sort of went out to the marketplace and said, look, you're pulling $1 million a year out of this business. Do you need $1 million? And he absolutely said, yes. I said, okay, well, you're going to get at the most $5 million for this company. You're going to burn through that in 5 years. What are you going to do now? And he has, and basically this family had what we call a lifestyle business, where there's the business is supplying a lifestyle. He wasn't necessarily interested. He thought he'd get $20, $30 million for his business. But at the end of the day, he was taking so much out of the business. The enterprise value was just so, so low. So for us, it was pretty simple. Do you need $1 million to live on? Yes. Well, you're going to have to keep on working because you have a lifestyle business. And unless someone's going to come in and give you 10 or 15 or 20 million, which we don't expect that to happen, you're going to have to stay in this business. But most business owners that I talk to don't run a lifestyle business, or maybe they did at one point, but now they're kind of thinking strategically about it. And it's really good to know that up front. So I'd say takeaways that I have for today's podcast is think about the planning from the realistic perspective. And I say to business owners all the time, I say, get a piece of paper out and write down all your trusted advisors. Once you write down all these trusted advisors, then go back and ask them if they have any experience in selling companies. And if the answer is, I've never done it directly, but I'm willing to give it a shot, or I have some experience in it, run for the hills. Because you need to have someone who can say, yes, I've done transactions like this, 10 to 15 of them over my career, and here's the result. That's a real example of someone who knows what they're doing. Second thing is you've got to align the three legs of your stool. I mean, that has got to be business, personal, and financial. You've got to align those. You cannot neglect the personal, financial side of the stool. You can't just look at business in a vacuum. You've got to look at all avenues. And that's not just me talking. That's actually the methodology that the Exit Planning Institute teaches. And the SEPA designation, in which I have, really teach from the get-go. And I know it feels self-serving to have a wealth advisor sitting at the first part of the meetings, but it is so critical. And business owners will say that, gosh, I wish I would have had my wealth advisor engaged early in the process. And three, and this is really the main driver, is that this is still, as we sit today, October the 30th, 2019, a very, very aggressive private business market. Multiples are starting to climb. We track those very closely. Businesses across the board are doing well. There's still $3 trillion in dry powder on the sidelines. People listening to this podcast who own a business, I can almost guarantee that someone has come up to them within the last 30 or 60 days and given them either an unsolicited offer to sell the business, or they've heard from a friend who sold their company for a lot of money. Begin the conversation early. Identify who your team needs to be. And gosh, Lisa, you add such a tremendous amount of value to the businesses that you work with just by setting up processes and things that can help make those companies best in class. But just make sure you're including the team throughout the entire process. You know, I'll end with this one quick story. I helped a family sell their company a couple of years ago, and I called a team meeting. And the business owner walked in the room in one of our conference rooms here in Tampa, and he sat down, looked to the left, looked to the right. And he said, I've owned this business for over 30 years, and I've never in the 30 years had all of my advisors in one room together.
That's shocking to me.
Think about that.
I mean, it's not, it is, but it isn't, you know?
And I said, guess what? This is the way it's going to be going forward.
Yep.
And it was just a delight. So engage early. You know, the thing that sort of I add value to the businesses that I work with, I'm generally looking for companies who have at least 2 million of EBITDA or greater. 1.5 million of EBITDA is fine, but really engage that conversation early. I have a white paper that I wrote last year that's very simple. It's a one pager sort of highlighting some of the things I've seen in my experience. And I'll share that with you, Lisa, as well. But it is just, I cannot underscore enough the importance of planning.
Yep. And I think we've really gotten that across today, how important it is to not even just look ahead, but to look ahead with the right people. I think that that's been a great example. And your examples have been phenomenal. I think your real world experience really brought a lot to the
Thank
people
you.
Today. Okay. Well, I really appreciate your time today, and it's just been great to talk to you.
Thank you, Lisa. And it has been an honor to be on this podcast, and thank you so much for thinking of me, and keep up the great work that you are doing in the business owner community. And as you start to create more and more awareness of how important processes are in business, I couldn't agree with you more.
Well, thank you very much. And I appreciate all your work with the AMAA and as being a SEPA and with BNY Mellon. I think you're doing a great job as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that concludes our episode today of the Confidence Series. Please feel free to come on to the Resource and Governance Consulting website for more information at www.resourceandgovernance.com. And you'll find a link there to be able to contact me, Dr. Lisa Miller. And Christopher, if you'd like to give your contact information, feel free to go ahead and say that.
Absolutely. My email address is christopher.swink, and that's spelled S as in Sam, W-I-N-K, at B as in boy, N as in Nancy, Y as in yellow, Mellon, MELLON.com. You can also find us at www.bnymellonwealth.com and our business owner specific website at bnymellonwealth.com/business-owner. Great tools on that website for all business owners, regardless of where you are in your life cycle, to create some ideas and really get some fruitful discussions going.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you very much. And thanks everybody for listening. Remember to stay focused.